Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @SchoolSucksShow. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to the show. Today is July 31st, and if you read the description, you know that the title is a little misleading. Teen teaches economics to teens. Elijah is no longer a teen, which actually makes our discussion even more interesting. He is 21 years old. He's finishing up a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism. He went to college after enjoying several years as a pretty successful YouTuber. He has a channel called Finance and Liberty that he started when he was just 16 years old, and he was really motivated to teach other teens about Austrian economics and financial self-defense. After all, where else were they going to learn about such things? So I would have been interested in talking to Elijah even if he was just a successful former teen YouTuber promoting the ideas of Austrian economics and sound money. But I thought there was an even more interesting angle here, that after a lifetime of being home educated, Elijah decided at, you know, the proper college age of 18 that he was going to head off and get a bachelor's degree in broadcast journalism. So we're also going to reflect back on his experience in higher education, and we're going to talk about the transition from a home education environment in a very religious family to a very progressive, I think is the word that they like to use, college environment. Before we get started today, folks, you know how I've been talking for months about something called Renegade University and School Sucks Project present a weekend with Thaddeus Russell? That is this coming weekend. It's here, but there are still tickets left. If you're fairly local, like New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, we pack a lot of little states together up in New England. Even Southern Maine is doable. Now, Northern Maine, I understand if you're up there and you can't make it, but you also don't have the internet, so you're not even listening to this. But if you're within, you know, hour and a half radius, there's still plenty of tickets left, including a reduced price for just the Sunday lecture. Because you know what? Thad and I got together and we looked at each other and we said, do people really need to be millionaires to be able to access opportunities for amazing life experiences? Let's knock that price down a little bit and see if we can get some of the regular folks in there. And that's what we've done. We're also going to be recording a live in front of an audience podcast that Sunday, where some bold and courageous listeners will be able to take the mic and debate with Thaddeus on a subject of their choosing. As you know, the School Sucks audience has lots of disagreements with Thad about lots of issues. The longer his podcast goes on, the more of those issues there will be. So I'm looking forward to that as well. That might be our next transmission, as a matter of fact, because it's going to be a pretty busy week. I'm meeting him in Salem on Thursday to do a walkthrough of the whole event. So I don't know if I'm going to have time to get any more shows to you. So if you're attending the event, you can hear that even sooner. SchoolSucksProject.com/ThadFest, or if you are ready to purchase a ticket, and both the whole event and the Sunday portion tickets are still available, ThaddeusRussell.com/courses. Also, since I probably won't talk to you again before this, the first day of that event, August 5th, is the 8th anniversary of School Sucks Podcast, so I definitely want to say thank you to everyone who has been listening, new or old listeners. We do have a lot of new people right now, and I would encourage them to, you know, go comb through our archives at SchoolSucksProject.com. We've done a lot through the years, and I definitely want to thank everybody who supports this show financially, either through our AV Club or through Patreon. But listening matters too. I know there are so many people right now competing for your time, so I am very grateful that you are willing to give some of your precious minutes and hours every week to us. So we'll be celebrating that August 5th as well, and you'll hear from me again shortly after that. Here's my conversation with Elijah Johnson. Thank you so much for listening, everybody.
You load 16 tons, and what do you get? You get another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, 'cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. Yes, sir, there's a many a Kentucky coal miner that pert near owes his soul to the company store. He gets so far in debt to the coal company he's a-working for that he goes on sometimes for years without being paid one red cent in real honest-to-goodness money. But he can always go to the company store and draw flickers or scrip. You know, that's little brass coins that you can't spend nowhere only at the company store. So they add that against his account, and every day he gets a little farther in debt. That sounds pretty bad, but even that's got a brighter side to it.
Hi, Elijah.
Hi, Brett. How are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks for coming on the show. We're always excited to talk to people who are doing things similar to what you're doing. You run a website called Finance and Liberty, and I guess the basic thrust of what you're doing is you're trying to take people around your age, from your generation, a very troubled generation. We talk about them on School Sucks a lot. And give them the kind of economics education that they're certainly not getting in public school. And unfortunately, they're also not really getting in higher education economics programs.
Definitely.
You're just 21 years old and you've been doing this since you were a teenager, right? Like 16?
Yep, since I was 16. That's when I started my first on YouTube. So, yep.
So can I ask how you, first of all, became educated, probably from an Austrian school, Ron Paul angle on the world of economics, and where you were when that happened, and you know what fell in your lap or what you went out and sought to become more literate on the subject of economics?
Right. So I was actually, for pretty much all my grade school and high school years, I was homeschooled, and that really taught me to think critically about everything I take in instead of going to public school, just kind of the one-size-fits-all style of learning. I really was able to learn at my own pace and study, while still covering the basics, study the topics and really dive deep into the topics I was really passionate about. And one of them was money and how money works. I first started, coin collecting when I was really, really young. When I was 5 years old or whatever. So that's been really one of my hobbies throughout the years. And when I was 10 years old, how does this stuff made? How is money created? And I wanted to write a report on it. So, being homeschooled, I was like, okay, for my writing class, I'll write a report on how money is created. And well, it was easier said than done because, by the time I finished the report, ironically, I still really didn't know how money was created.
Yeah. I'm just thinking like poor 10-year-old trying to understand the monetary system. Wow. Yeah.
Right. So what I was like, okay, I still don't understand this. And it was actually not until I was 15. So many years later, I was like, okay, I really want to get to the bottom of this. By then I had, studied in depth other topics and I really wanted to get to the bottom of things, trying to understand, maybe like global warming. And also, I looked into like evolution versus creationism. And a lot of the time I found that people on either sides of the issues were really one-sided, and really didn't reveal the whole truth behind the subject. So I had to look at both sides. I had to listen to a lot of debates on the subject to actually then form my own opinion about it. And when I started learning about how money is created, my mind was just blown, because what I learned was that the Federal Reserve creates our money, and the Federal Reserve isn't even really a government agency. It's kind of a pseudo-government agency that has stockholders, which are the banks. So it's kind of like it's owned by the banks. It's supposed to be regulating. What the heck? This is kind of a huge scam here. So basically what I learned is that, money doesn't have any backing to it. It's not backed by gold anymore. And basically the Federal Reserve creates the money, and this is maybe a little bit oversimplification, but it then uses that money. It lends it to the government. It lends it to banks. It, kind of does backdoor Wall Street bailouts. When it does quantitative easing, buying mortgage-backed securities or toxic assets off of banks' balance sheets. Mm-hmm. So what I learned is that basically when the money goes into the system, it devalues all the other money in the system, because when there's more money, it has less value. So when there's more money and the same amounts of goods and services the money can chase, then the money reduces in value and we see inflation. So
yeah, it's interesting too that when the money first like splashes, like the new money, the quantitative easing, when it first splashes in the money pool, you know, it's got its highest value, right? So
right.
The first thing it hits are the banks and, you know, the corporations or the government contractors that need it. And then that, you know, that plunge sort of calms down and it ripples out through the rest of the pool, getting increasingly worthless as it goes out to the rest of us. So it's a pretty insidious system.
Right. So it transfers money from the savers to, you know, the people who get the money first. So it's kind of a transfer of wealth from the middle class and the poor up to the bankers and the elite. And this was just, I don't know, unsettling to me. And it was like, this seems like a really big scam. This is not fair. You know, so I really wanted to. Another thing I learned, kind of just not to get too sidetracked here, but, you know, that all fiat currencies or paper currencies that aren't backed by anything eventually fall to zero. And I realized that, wait a second, the dollar and actually now all other currencies around the world aren't backed by anything. So eventually we're going to see a dollar collapse and currency crisis that's maybe going to, you know, affect the whole world. So I really wanted to educate people first on, okay, the system we're living in right now, the monetary system, is a huge scam. And second of all, look, this is going to fail sometime. And I want to be prepared myself. And I also want to help others learn about this and maybe prepare themselves if they think the same way.
Awesome. So you've laid out two different paths that go completely in different directions, but we're going to go down both of them. I'm just going to pick the home education direction first. I'm interested in how you came to be home educated. And once we talk about this a little bit, we'll deal with the outreach to people your age and what success you've had with that and what you're trying to tell them. But a little bit more about your history first. Why were you homeschooled?
Right. So actually, it started with I have four siblings, and my three older siblings, you know, first went to public school. Our house in Minnesota was right across the street from a elementary school. So when my oldest siblings were really young, they first went to, you know, first, second, third grade or whatever. And basically, how I've been told about it is basically they really did not like the system. They didn't like the, I guess, maybe social environment at the school,
sure.
You know? So basically, my parents decided to homeschool them. And it then when me and my brother came along, we were homeschooled as well. We did do kindergarten at public school because, you know, kindergarten is just kind of one of those, you know, grades that's just for fun. And it was a fun experience just to, you know, have kind of a fun schooling at public school. So we did kindergarten at public school. But then we were homeschooled for the rest of our years until my senior year of high school. I did post-secondary enrollment option at college. But so basically that's how it worked. It's just we didn't like the public school system. And one of the things that I realized being homeschooled is I could really take things at my own pace. It wasn't, you know, at the ring of a bell, I'm have to stop one subject, go on to the next. It was more at my own pace. And one of the things that I struggled with was reading because I'm dyslexic. So one of the things I've done more recently, actually, it would have been a little bit more helpful if I did more of this because I just actually recently learned that I was dyslexic. I went to a specialist. But one of the things that has helped me now is, you know, I can really take things at my own pace. I can, you know, listen to books instead of, you know, having to read them all, listen to the audiobooks and so on. But one of the things about homeschooling that I really enjoyed was, you know, taking things at my own pace. And some subjects I was really passionate about and could really dive headfirst into, such mm-hmm. as, you know, evolution versus creationism, global warming, like string theory and other dimensions and stuff like that. I mean, obviously, you have to cover the basics, but it was less of, well, we have to learn this, and we have to learn this subject, and we have to learn this subject. It was more studying what you're passionate about. So, yeah.
Absolutely. Did your parents have some kind of guiding philosophy or curriculum, or was it really just a lot of educational and exploratory freedom for you?
I mean, it was kind of a mixture of both. We always created our curriculum, like at the beginning of the year. We got different workbooks and stuff like that. And one of the things that we really tried to do is do hands-on activities and like field trips. And instead of, you know, just reading about different national parks or whatever, we took a trip one summer down, you know, across the United States. We saw Yellowstone, the Badlands, and, you know, all those places. So we really, one of the things we did, and we, you know, before that, we, you know, wrote reports on the places that we were going to see when we went on a cruise around Central America. We, you know, studied the places we were going to see, and then actually saw them in real life. So that's one of the things. We also had the freedom of, you know, not having to go along with some, you know, arbitrary school schedule. We could, you know, take vacations or trips when we wanted to, mm-hmm. and really experience things in real life. So.
Yeah. So even if, you know, people do decide that they want to work in certain subjects from a certain curriculum, right? It's fine as long as there's like a great availability of adjustment mm-hmm. based on the individual motivation or interests of the learner, where, you know, something might be full steam ahead for or full speed ahead for like a week and something else might almost fall out of the picture completely. As long as, you know, modification exists along the way, I think I've seen people in even like unschooling environments be really successful using different types of curricula. It's, you know, when I was a teacher, we talked about this, right? We talked about accommodating and adjusting. But what comes with that in the school is a feeling of like there's something defective about you if you require these things, if you don't fit that mold. So I think that's like one of the greatest benefits of being able to do home education is there's these stigmas that never develop for kids because they're completely unnecessary and they're completely wrong. So, yeah, I think that you articulated that nicely right there. You know, you are able to follow your own interests, and that's not, you know, any kind of indication that something is wrong with you or you're behind. There's just that's so prevalent in school, and I think it's really unfortunate.
Definitely. And I mean, one of the things I was talking about, you know, how I struggled with reading because I was dyslexic. And one of the things that really helped when I started doing my interviews and, you know, interviewing financial experts is that was, you know, then a big part of my economics education. So I didn't have to, you know, read out of some book. I could actually talk to experts about it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
One of the things, actually before I started, you know, posting these interviews, one of the things I did was like, you know, shadowing different professionals. So I went to a bank and, you know, asked one of the bankers a bunch of questions about their job.
Oh, outstanding. Yeah.
And yeah, so I did things like that. And I remember I also, you know, interviewed investment brokers, you know, near where we live. So, yeah, I mean, it was just things like that, doing real things instead of having to, you know, maybe get everything from just a book, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's another problem with the schools is that there aren't really any experts available, right? You'd have to go and find them off school hours. It's just another great benefit of home education is you are not basically being pushed around by bells and through hallways with a bunch of people who are exactly the same age and have exactly the same lack of experience that you have. If you are not in that building all day, you can go out and, you know, find one of the greatest ways to learn historically in this country was through apprenticeship and just going and having those interactions with certain people, even if they only last a day or a week and they're not like a full, you know, year long or 2 year long apprenticeship. They create tremendous learning opportunities for young people that, again, just don't exist in the confines of normal schooling. So I think that's very cool that you were able to have those experiences. And would you say that actually going and, you know, shadowing people or interacting with people like that and, you know, trying to get information through an interview process, was that partly responsible for you starting this, you know, this sort of news and information YouTube channel where you interview, you know, experts on a variety of political and economic issues?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say it's definitely a part of what helped me or maybe motivated me to actually, you know, reach out to these experts. But one of the other things I was doing is, you know, I was listening to other podcasts on YouTube, kind of like the ones that I made. So I was like, well, hey, I could try kind of a similar thing. I listened to a lot of different people in the, you know, the independent media and make it also my own. So that's another thing that really influenced me. And I guess another thing about homeschooling, it wasn't just, you know, talking to real life experts. It also trained me to be able to educate myself on a lot of things. Because the thing with public schools, as we were talking about, it's just, you know, going from one subject to the next. And it's really inefficient also, because a lot of the time at college, when I'm there, I'm like, I already know what the teacher's talking about, or, you know, the teachers maybe might be going too fast or whatever. But when you're able to educate yourself about things with the, you know, the correct resources, it's so much more efficient in my mind a lot of the time. And just the ability to educate myself, I think, is also a really great thing I've gained from, you know, being homeschooled in the first place.
Absolutely. So. Yeah. So you mentioned that you're in college. Do you feel like your home education experience better prepared you for college than a lot of your peers? or do you feel like you encountered some unexpected challenges in the college environment because you didn't have that experience? I know that that sounds weird, but I think it's certainly possible. And after you comment on that, I'd like to hear a little bit about the transition process from home education to college. That's an area of concern, I think, for a lot of families. Like, I don't want to put my son or daughter in these schools, but I'm worried about the process of getting them on a college track if they do want to go to college.
So the first question about did it prepare me better, I'm not 100% sure because, you know, I didn't originally go to public school, so I don't have that, I guess, experience. I have the experience coming from homeschool.
I guess a way to think about the question is, as you look at yourself and your peers, do you feel you have advantages over them in certain areas, or are there places where you feel like you could have been better prepared? And I think a better way to maybe direct that question would be to say, well, first of all, to clarify, what are you studying in college?
Oh, broadcast journalism and also multi-platform journalism. So like online journalism, print journalism. So basically all forms of journalism. One of the things that really prepared me was not necessarily homeschooling essentially, but just really my parents, you know, getting me ready for college and, you know, letting me know that, you know, college is a lot harder than high school. So it was more an influence from my parents that really helped me to prepare me. And I guess homeschooling does allow that a lot more coaching from your parents. And I think this is, you know, a whole nother subject, but I feel like being homeschooled really helped me to not just, you know, have a relationship, you know, with my peers. I had, you know, great friendship with other homeschoolers and other people in my area. But one of the things about homeschooling is that it kind of looks at, you know, the family as the primary unit of society instead of the government, you know, the kids being taken away by the government and put into school. It's really the parents that have the natural right to educate their children. I think homeschooling really, you know, brings family together and looks at family as the primary unit of society and really helps strengthen family instead of people feeling alienated as this just one member in a huge society or a huge school. It helps really bring families together as well.
I agree with what you're saying. And I think that, you know, this kind of helps me focus in that question a little bit, because then you transition into a setting where the prevailing idea, because most people your age are very left-leaning, and fortunately, you know, you're not studying some kind of oppressive field as far as like intellectual freedom is concerned, like something in social science, where, you know, you're really not allowed, you're penalized for being a free thinker. And I guess, you know, you get to this place where the prevailing attitude is that the government does have a very, very important role in the politics that I think that are pervasive throughout not just the higher education environment, but really throughout your generation. The family, in many ways, is almost a kind of liability. The family is a promoter of inequality. The family is a kind of a check in many ways, families and communities against the expansion of state power. But also there's a real stigma that I've encountered throughout my entire political awareness about home education. There's a certain caricature that appears that these are people who are super religious and don't want to expose their kids to science. So the family is almost a problem for the state to resolve through its schooling. That's a very common attitude. I don't know if you've encountered that in higher education or not, or just in your generation with you know, a lot of the democratic leftist politics that exists there.
Yeah. So as you were saying about how there's kind of this stereotype that homeschoolers are super religious and don't think critically. And when I went to college, that's also kind of the attitude towards religion in general, that it's people don't think critically about anything and they just, you know, believe because they believe. And one of the things that I learned studying my own religion, because I am very religious, I'm Catholic, and my family is very religious as well, that it's not like you can't ask questions. It's not like you can't study science at all. Science tells us about the world that God created. And my faith journey, in a sense, is learning, you know, the arguments for the existence of God, and then also the rational basis for religion, and then intellectually believing that something is true. Because a lot of people just drift away from religion, not maybe by argument, but just because the world pulls them in another direction, or they have different desires that pulls them in another direction. So basically, my view of religion and faith is that making your decisions and believing in what you know to be true, not because you just want to believe it because it's wishful thinking or whatever. It's staying hard to what you intellectually know to be true instead of letting your desires and emotions pull you in the other direction. And also what C.S. Lewis talks about in his book, Mere Christianity, that view is in complete contradiction with what a lot of people believe about, oh, you know, science and religion contradict. And in my view, they don't at all, because God created the world and we can study the world. That's perfectly fine.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a caricature. People talk about literal interpretations of, you know, the Old Testament, of the Bible,
right.
And it gets very cartoony for a lot of people very quickly. I was raised Catholic, and, you know, I found it to not be the best thing for me. For a long time, I felt a lot of hostility towards, you know, not just Catholicism, but religion in general. I think a lot of people are attracted to the kind of sophistication they can get from rejecting religion without really understanding why they're rejecting it. And a lot of times they might just be rejecting it because they're seeking some kind of easier path through life. And I think there's other ways to find a kind of principle and a kind of discipline that leads to happiness and success in life. But I certainly also recognize that that path for a lot of people is religion. And I was kind of superimposing my experience onto a lot of other people. And I have, from listening to a lot of people, you know, whether they were Catholic or even like Orthodox Jews like Ben Shapiro, that, like, oh, there are really, really brilliant people who are, you know, very, you know, strong adherents to a certain kind of faith. So, you know, my attitude has changed about that. But how do we even get off on that? What did I ask you that led us there?
Oh, no, I think it was about the college environment and I guess the stereotype that homeschoolers are, you know, super irrational and, you know, religious believers and irrational,
sure,
and all that. So,
well, it's not even just the religious aspect of it, right? The religion, the kind of cartoony religion thing gets wrapped up in it to make it look unsophisticated. Like if somebody must have some kind of ulterior motive that is, you know, going to contribute to the damage of their child by not putting them into a government school. I mean, that's a very, very common attitude. The family is downplayed along with community, right, in favor of state solutions to problems. So I think that's a difficult thing to encounter. Somebody with your background to have to encounter day in and day out in higher education. The other part of that question would be, because you did have this educational freedom, even if you were following a curriculum or a certain set of guidelines to learn something, you could do it at your pace and your time, using, you know, your motivation and really kind of capitalizing on your motivation when it was high and maybe, you know, taking a break from it when the motivation was a little bit lower. Do you feel like, having had that experience and now going into something that's more structured like college, there's a liability for you to have to try and conform to less educational freedom that maybe other kids don't have to deal with because they've never had any?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess it's one testimony I can give is about an internship that I was trying to get approved for my college. And basically, it was with an independent news site. And one of the professors was like, no, we can't approve this as a journalism internship. And I was like, seriously, I'm gonna be, you know, interviewing financial experts. This doesn't count. And so I actually did end up getting it approved by another professor. But I guess I'd almost look at it as a little bit old fashioned in a sense. They're, you know, stuck with the idea that, you know, the internships have to be, you know, at some news station or something like that. When in reality, we're seeing the rise of the independent media and also just the college environment in general. And, you know, going from class to class, it's, like I was saying earlier, it's very inefficient in my mind. And it's not, you know, studying and going in depth into subjects I'm really passionate about. It's more fulfilling an arbitrary checklist of, well, I have to take English this semester. I have to take, you know, the last year of Spanish this semester. I need to take sociology this semester or whatever. Mm-hmm. All those different subjects to fill, you know, the requirement checklist or whatever. And it's like, well, some of the subjects I'm like, okay, actually, this is pretty interesting. Like, you know, sociology I just took last semester. I thought it was really interesting. But I was like taking English literature last semester. I'm like, we're just reading a bunch of like modern crap. It was just awful. It was like, this does not make any sense. Why are we doing this? This is not helping me at all. So yeah, it's very more of like a checklist you have to do. And I wish I didn't have this attitude. I want to have a more of a learning attitude, but I feel like the college environment really makes you more have more of an attitude of just caring about your grades rather than actually the subjects you're learning. Just doing something, you know, writing something for the grade rather than actually wanting to learn about a subject. So I feel like that's the direction, or you know, and just studying for tests. You know, the teacher will give you a study guide, so you just study these things on the study guide, and it's just memorizing some things instead of actually learning the subjects that you're supposed to be studying. So it's that sort of attitude a lot of students, and I've noticed myself I have as well, is it's more about the, you know, getting, you know, the A's or whatever, you know, the grades, instead of actually learning the subjects. And it's also, you know, just studying subjects, a lot of subjects I don't care about and I don't think are going to be very useful in the future for me.
That's interesting, because you avoided 15,000 hours of public school and you still seem to understand exactly what that experience would have been like just from attending college for 3 or 4 years. Amazing. So now you're almost done and you're studying broadcasting. Do you feel like, and you've been doing what you've been doing online for like 5 years, like back before you were in college. So now looking back at your college experience and also paralleling, you know, the growth of your media platform during that time, do you think this education that is fairly expensive has helped you do what you do online more effectively, more successfully?
I guess I'd have to answer it in yes, but I'm not sure it was worth it, because I mean, I just have a year left, so I am going to finish up and graduate, but I've learned, you know, some in college, and I took this great broadcast journalism class. It was a 2-semester thing these last 2 semesters, and I thought the teacher at first I thought was crazy, and then I was like, actually no, she knows exactly what she's talking about, and she's actually a really great teacher, and I learned a lot from that class. But I feel like I probably could have learned what I know, you know, a lot less time if I would have just studied it myself. And so I feel like it's very inefficient. And if you want to end up being an entrepreneur like I want to be, then I'm not sure it was actually necessary. So, I mean, it does give me, you know, a fallback if my YouTube channel doesn't end up working and I don't end up being able to do this. But it seems to be working right now, and that's really what I want to end up doing, is continuing to be, you know, an independent financial news show host. So, and I want to, you know, eventually maybe, you know, have a whole studio doing it every day and so on. But what I've learned is that the whole thing about schooling is it's just so inefficient, and it's not geared towards people's passions.
Right.
I don't really enjoy what I do at college. I do it so I can get a good grade. The motivation is not so I can learn. And that's what I feel is really lacking. So it really, I guess that's a roundabout way to answer your question. Yes, I think I have learned a lot in college, but I think it's been very inefficient.
Yeah, you think it was kind of like a slow drip of learning what you could have learned outside of college. So there, you know, there's the opportunity that comes at the end in the form of this piece of paper that they hand you that you can go and show employers. But there's also an opportunity cost, maybe. I mean, this was, yeah, I really struggled with this question myself, because like I said, you know, I graduated college in the year 2000. I had a very similar major to yours. little history here that's interesting, you know, and that it relates to what you focus on your YouTube channel as well. I was studying broadcasting and communications in college, shut away from the world, while the digital revolution was taking place outside of that. So we actually learned a lot of, like, you know, Windows 95 like software programs and old ways of doing, like, you know, video production. The editors that we had to use to edit video together, like news packages and stuff. Like we were being prepared to be, like, you know, television reporters. I mean, it was a broad program. There was like a journalism aspect to it. There was a radio and a television aspect to it as well, like print journalism, I mean. But we were in a room, and the entire room was like the editing deck that we would use. It was, you know, it was like the size of a college dorm room. That's how much space you needed to edit video together. 20 years ago. So by the time I got out into the world, I realized very quickly, you know, by 2001, 2002, that I had been prepared for nothing because everything that I had learned wasn't relevant anymore. And, you know, the other thing, too, is that we weren't given any education in economics because the attitude, I'm not saying we would have been if the attitudes were different, but the attitude in the late 90s was that the U.S. economy was in a boom without end, right? Like, you can watch the 20th century, just like there's like two, you know, recessions every decade pretty consistently throughout that century. But with the tech bubble, the very kinds of advancements in society that would help me later, but at the same time were making my college degree worthless, no one saw an end to that. So also, I went out into the adult world completely naive and completely unprepared for the fact that I was probably going to have to do some financial self-defense in my life, right? That idea didn't exist. It was sort of like we all thought we would be millionaires. You know, that was like a prevailing attitude in the late 1990s. And then obviously by the time I was like 30 years old, when the housing crisis, that the 2008 financial crisis hit, that was like a real wake up call that I had some pretty significant blind spots that need to be resolved. That takes us, I guess, all the way back to that starting point. And now we can go down that other path a little bit, which is the outreach work you do. You know, it said that on your website, you're really concerned with reaching people your own age. And giving them the financial education they're not going to get anywhere else. And maybe not just so much in the Austrian School of Economics, but also in that self-defense that I talked about, how to basically prepare for economic hard times and how to prepare basically to avoid those economic hard times. What success have you had reaching out to people your age?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think on my YouTube channel, it's been very successful. Most of the people, actually, though, that I'm reaching out to are older. But I really want to reach out to whoever I can. You know, I've gotten, I think, millions of views on my YouTube channel, and it's really great to see how many people are now, you know, waking up to the realization that the money that we have really isn't worth anything, and we need to prepare for a possible financial collapse that's going to happen in the future. And basically, it's just great to, you know, get the word out and, you know, educate people about this and spread the word about this.
Have you tried to do this one-on-one or face-to-face in your college setting with people, like outside of YouTube, where you have more of like a real-time feedback and response from people?
Right. I mean, I've told a couple people, you know, what I do on YouTube and stuff. I haven't really met too many people who are really interested in the subject, though. So,
of course not. Right.
Some of the time, I know I was writing an article about how precious metals, this was back in January 2016, or the first quarter of 2016, and how there was a lot of demand for precious metals at that point, and how it seemed like the economy was very weak. One of my peers was looking at my article and they were like, well, it seems like what's wrong with the economy? You know, it seems like there's always bad things happening. So it seems like a lot of people are just of the mindset that, well, there's, you know, some bad things happening, but we're going to be okay. And in my view, it's like, well, no, throughout history, you know, fiat currencies and paper currencies have always fallen to zero. So it's prudent to prepare for that eventually happening. In my view, it seems like if history repeats itself, which it seems like it always does, that we're going to be in for some hard times ahead.
And, you know, I definitely do want to direct people to your YouTube channel because I think you do a really nice job of not only providing economics education, but you have a lot of really great interviews where you connect national political issues and also global issues to their economic consequences. And I think that's really valuable to be able to see that cause and effect. It makes, you know, kind of a dry and abstruse subject more real for a lot of young people who might be somewhat interested in global or national politics, but they don't really understand the relationship of economics, which is strange because it's such a huge part of it. So that being said, yes, I'd like you to get more traffic from my young audience to your YouTube channel. But what are, just maybe like a preview here, what are some of the strategies that you're sharing with young people or that you're encouraging? Are you entirely like a precious metals guy, or do you look into cryptocurrencies?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I can't give financial advice, but
right.
How I've always looked at it is that, you know, precious metals throughout history have not fallen to zero. And I feel like they're the best bet right now, because I don't trust the stock market right now. It seems extremely inflated right now. And I don't trust, you know, bonds or anything to do with U.S. dollars. So I really want to just at least protect some of my finances in something that has never fallen to zero. And in these times, when we see a currency crisis, precious metals not only rise with inflation, so they maintain their value, they also often increase in value, so increase in purchasing power. So at least you should have some of your finances in precious metals. And I haven't experimented at all with cryptocurrencies. We talk about it sometimes on my YouTube channel, but personally, I haven't really looked into it that much and haven't invested in them. It seems in my mind that it's the principle is that scarcity by itself equals value. And I just, it doesn't seem like cryptocurrencies are based on a sound principle, because, you know, you can have something that's very scarce, but that doesn't mean it's valuable. Something's value depends on supply and demand. I think right now, the whole thing about Bitcoin, it's based on irrationality, because it's based on the principle that scarcity equals value. And that's just simply not true. I don't know how long this is going to end up going, but in my mind, I just don't see how things like cryptocurrencies can last very long.
Well, I mean, I'm not an expert on Bitcoin, but I think part of the appeal beyond just, you know, like creating just value being created through scarcity, part of the appeal was anonymity that's possible. That was something that attracted a lot of libertarians right. to it. The divisibility of it and the flexibility, the multi-purpose use of the blockchain for all kinds of things beyond just, you know, actually trading some kind of value for value. So I was just interested in touching on that, because I know there's a lot of, you know, sound money, precious metals people like Peter Schiff included, who are a little bit cold on cryptocurrencies. A great resource. I actually edited his book not too long ago. His name is Andreas Antonopoulos. So if you or anyone in your audience is more interested in learning, just put Andreas Antonopoulos into YouTube, and there's like tons of great talks where he, you know, in a fairly short amount of time, usually like 20 to 30 minutes, can make a pretty convincing case for at least giving a fair trial to cryptocurrencies, mm-hmm. you know. So just worth mentioning, I thought.
Right, yeah, and I'm totally fine with being wrong about this, because mm-hmm. I mean, but believing that cryptocurrencies is going to work, you'd have to assert that it's going to be the only currency in history that hasn't been backed by anything of intrinsic value and survived. And maybe this time is different, but a lot of the time when people say this time is different, you know, it's not true. So I could be wrong, but I'm just not willing to take that bet. So.
Sure, absolutely. And there is a hot debate about, I know that Peter Schiff's been involved in it in it several times as well. So something that I'll keep my eye on over the next year or so, because I'm still trying to understand it fully myself, I would say. Well, Elijah, I think we can leave it there for today. I'm always super excited when I see a young person making a significant mark, basically asserting your own voice and helping other people. And, you know, you're not just doing it at 21. You were doing it 5 years ago. And I wish you the best of luck. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to plug your projects here for my audience before I let you go.
Oh, sure. So people can go to financeandliberty.com. They can subscribe to our email newsletter, and they'll get all updates from my YouTube channel, all my new interviews and stuff like that. And also, I'm working on Silver Doctors over there, the YouTube channel on Silver Doctors, youtube.com/Silver Doctors. And my interviews will also pop up on silverdoctors.com as well.
And what is Silver Doctors? What is the mission there?
They're another independent news agency. One of the things that they do also is the side of the business, SD Bullion, sells precious metals. And so the idea is it's restoring your financial health in a sense. So
excellent. Excellent. All right, Elijah, thank you so much for coming on School Sucks. I definitely appreciate you doing this, and I wish you good luck.
Yeah, thank you so much.
In the old days, when a young man was a strong man, all the people
your man.